Blog Talk Radio.
Everything's going on with football, both college and pro, as I said earlier. But anyway, let's get party started, shall we? I'm Scott Burks. I'm your host of The Clown Hour. I'm the creator of a sports blog called The Clown Times. It's Clown Spill BK. You can find me on the web at www.theclowntimes.net. And you also find me on Facebook. I'm starting to wrap up a little bit with the NFL season right around the corner and college football already here, especially trolling. And Texas A&M fans, more on that in a moment. You can just go to the upper left-hand search window, the upper left-hand corner, rather, of Facebook, and just type in the Clown Times. Again, that's Clown spelled with K. You can find me there as well. This is football week. This is the full college football week one, as well as the NFL weekend that's starting tomorrow, as a matter of fact, with those damn Patriots going to take on the Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to be previewing that season, the NFL season, as well as just, you know, as I said earlier, wrapping up this past week in college football. So help me with this. Y'all know him. Know him well, as a matter of fact. You can see him on the r/HBCU Sports, where he raps about all things HBCU sports, as well as hear him on Sleazy Radio every Tuesday night with his homie, other coach on Blog Talk Radio, the one and only, the iconic Wayne Ash. What's up, man?
Scott, what's going on?
Oh, this is a wonderful time to be alive, man. Football season and its finest and all its glory. I've been waiting for, like, this month for the past 7 months, man. Yeah, that's about 7 months since the end of February, since the beginning of February. So,
yeah.
It's cool,
yeah.
Man. Cool time to be alive. It is awesome to be alive right now if you're a football fan.
But just real quick before we continue, I'd be remiss if I didn't also include Sweet Lou into our trio over there at Sleazy Sports. I know Lou, he's the one that basically keeps the show together. He keeps us sane, you know, kind of leads the show, but Lou keeps us sane. And also, huge announcement, the format in which the Yard HBCU Sports will be coming to the world will be changing,
yes,
as of tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
We'll be doing everything via video. So I'll be doing shorts, basically covering everything for the week coming, and also doing previews and just small commentary on things that are going on throughout the week. So once everything is set up, we're going to do everything through YouTube. I'm going to start putting out the links, and that's how we're going to start doing everything from here on out. Also, we're going to start doing a lot of things via Facebook Live in terms of live pregame and postgame coverage of games, and also a couple of insider videos as well in terms of seeing things from the perspective of the sidelines, also pregame and postgame on the sidelines with players and coaches as well of your favorite teams. And we're going to go ahead and cement it out that way instead of just doing your traditional blog responses and stories.
You know what? That's awesome. I need to get my ass together and do more videos as well. I'm just too lazy. So props to you for getting the videos together. And, yeah, just let the world know. I know you're on Facebook and everything and on Twitter. So, please, by all means, bless us with the information once that gets up and running. So, that's awesome news. So speaking of
no staff
HBCU sports, at least kind of sort of, well, actually, we will be touching on that momentarily when we talk about college football's week one. I'll get to that in a moment. I'm just going to tease it. how wonderful, how great was the week, the full week? Well, I'm not talking about the previous week where I just maybe two or three games. I'm talking about the whole kit and caboodle. Last Saturday,
yes.
This past Saturday, I should say, a couple of Sunday night games that were very entertaining, and the Monday night game between Tennessee and Georgia Tech. So, I'll give my quick take on it real quick, and I'm going to give you the floor.
All right.
As always, we as fans and folks in the media as well, we all tend to panic after week one. You know what I mean? It's like if our team does not perform up to snuff, we fly off the handle. I flew off the handle at my beloved AC State Wolfpack on that in a moment as well, dropping the game to South Carolina. But I guess we all tend to forget that this is like week one, which is, means that it's essentially, since they don't have a preseason, the preseason game. You know, that's why a lot of teams, these teams schedule, I don't want to call them cupcakes necessarily, but just smaller school opponents. And, that's why they do that. But, I mean, a few things stuck out to me, man. I'll probably just go off the rails or go when I talk NC State. But I will go off the rails on NC State. I mean, I'm just totally disgusted with Dave Doran. What are your thoughts? I mean, and also I thought about you when Maryland beat Texas the way that they did. I mean, that was forget the final score. That was a domination by Maryland on the road.
Yeah.
So I watched that almost from start to finish. But I was thinking, I know Dwayne is licking his chops right now. His beloved Terrapins is wrecking shop on Fox Sports right now, Fox Sports 1. But at any rate, give me your thoughts on week one of the college football season. What stuck out to you the most?
Well, before I get to my week one thoughts, it's weird because I thought about you about the exact same game, mainly because of Charlie Strong. But, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But for those that follow me on Twitter, it was weird. It's weird that happened. I don't know how or why that's the case, but for those that follow me on Twitter and those that are friends of mine on Facebook, I refer to this past college football week as Guard Your Grill Saturday because, God, it didn't matter – who you were or where you were, you was getting a piece. If you weren't playing to the best of your ability, you was going to catch a piece. And, you can go ahead and call some of those games cupcakes if you want. Remember when we were growing up, especially during Halloween, they always told your parents to check your candy because sometimes that weird dude on the block will probably put that razor blade in the apple, which was kind of weird to me. I'm still trying to figure out how that was possible. But, all that crazy stuff, if you ain't careful, that razor blade apple was coming at you, and it came at a couple of people this weekend. There were a couple of things, we talked about a couple.
Dwayne, you there, buddy? Oh, boy. Hold on for a second. Let's see. Maybe having some technical difficulties here. Dwayne, you there? Okay. Once Dwayne gets back in, we're going to just try and keep it moving here. But at any rate, he was giving his thoughts on
the five. Hello.
Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about that. Well, what I was saying was there was one word that came to mind over the past couple of days. That outside of Guard Your Grill Saturday, that kind of described what was going on this past weekend, which was parity. We don't see it as much within the Power Five conferences, or sometimes we'll see it occasionally, but outside of that, those other conferences, and then you start talking about the good teams that they play from the FCS level.
Yeah.
We started to see the FCS level teams sneak up and beat some of these lower level FBS teams. And then there were some occasions where Division II teams were beating FCS opponents. So these rivalries fool you if you want. You let these levels get to you if you want. With these guys leaving early, these guys are transferring now. And
right.
in the case of Howard, like we just talked about, you know, maybe it's improved coaching in that situation. Who knows? You start getting those things together. These teams that not that weren't supposed to beat you are now beating you and are starting to become a little bit more impressive. So that was my roundup for this past weekend. Man, if you weren't paying attention, you was going to get snuck and you were going to get embarrassed. And in some cases, you paid for it. Case in point, UNLV literally paying for
right.
it.
Yeah, exactly. They literally paid for it. And if you bet against them, you got paid. But I'll throw to that
yes.
in a moment, man. But yo, your point, I think that we didn't learn from what happened 10 years ago this past Saturday when Appalachian State, and I remember exactly where I was. I was chilling at Triangle Town Center in Raleigh, about to
mm-hmm.
get a bite to eat, when the following score flashed upon my cell phone. When App State beat Michigan in the Big House
yes.
on a butt field goal, that was probably one of the most awesome upsets. That was the clip this past weekend in terms of the point spread of all time.
Yes.
You know, which was a question I might as well get to because I'm teasing it too much. Howard, the number that they did at UNLV. Now, Howard, I believe I'm correct, and help me on this, was a 45-point underdog. And,
yes, sir.
And which means, even though they played UNLV, they had no chance, no snowball chance of hell of winning. But along came a freshman by the name of Kalen Newton, who happens to be the younger brother,
mm-hmm.
Cam. And
yes.
he put on a show. And
my
that
God.
Same power team coached by a former Virginia team coach, Mike London, who also coached the Richmond Spiders to national relevance on the FCS level way back when. So
mm-hmm.
you have all those components mixed up together, combined the fact that even if UNLV is a FCS school, I mean, they weren't ready. I mean, granted, the school
no.
was close, but the fact of the matter is that you let an FCS school come into your crib after you paid them to come to your crib, because we all know how that goes. You know, they normally pay the small schools to come.
Mm-hmm.
And they got beat. And
yes.
basically, as a result, Mike London and Kalen Newton, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Kalen,
yes.
Now, like national news, what national news looked like over the weekend, and good for them.
Yes,
good for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to week one, as far as like in the whole, as a whole, there were some teams that they had to be kicking themselves in the ass, squarely in the ass, for letting games get away. Case in point, NC State against South Carolina. On paper, NC State had no damn business losing South Carolina. On paper, okay? NC State's supposed to have one of the best front sevens in the country coming back. They're like sophomores. They're like juniors and seniors now, led by, I think his name is, like one of the Chubb boys. Not Nick Chubb, but Nick Chubb's brother, older brother. I forget his name. But nevertheless, and they had a better quarterback and have Finley, but they just got out coached. I mean, it's rare that, you know, people would say, especially after the Florida years about Miss Will Muschamp, that he could out coach folks. But he out coached
mm-hmm.
the hell out of Dave Doran. It's like watching Dave Doran year after year, you see the same mistakes over and over and over. Big game, national television. They failed to show up. Case in point, that kickoff return to open the game for South Carolina. As soon as that happened, I'm like, oh, it's over. We're not ready to play. We're not ready to play. And it was a tough, and granted, I know it's the Charlotte, is what I call it, for South Carolina, only an hour and change away. from Columbia.
Yeah.
But still,
mm-hmm.
you got to represent. You're on national television. You got to show the hell up and take and let people notice, hey, we're in this. We're going to be a force to be reckoned with. But, no, the defense laid an egg. Dave Dorn got outcoached by Muschamp. Didn't have his troops ready to play. And it's the same old crap over and over and over again. And also, to a lesser extent, Tennessee and Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech ran for almost 1,000 yards up and down Tennessee. And yet Tennessee came up with a win. Why? Because of poor special teams play and a dubious coach and turnovers, rather, and dubious coaching decision when Paul Johnson elected to go for two early in overtime instead of just going for one and playing. And because the thing is, some people have missed out on, when he went for two, he could have went for one, but they'll have to go to two the next time they score, both teams score, like the next cycle. You know what I mean? So in other words, he could have and perhaps should have waited and get the extra point and make Tennessee get the 2 points, make Tennessee score again. Because mm-hmm. Tennessee could not stop Georgia Tech's ground game. They could not stop them. But the most heartbreaking thing about that is, you know, special teams did them in as well, as did Florida State against Alabama and the NC State as well. I mean, the special teams, it just goes to show special teams is pretty damn important. It cost these two teams winnable games because they should have won. So I know, again, it's early. They could clean that stuff up. But now you're going to hear SEC fan crow about getting the best of ACC this past weekend.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised I haven't heard much of it yet. But you're right.
We got to hear that now. I mean, Tennessee and South Carolina had no damn business when it was there to respect the games. But I have one more thing at least.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia Tech is really, really bad. They beat a damn good West Virginia team on a neutral site Sunday night. And that was the thing of beauty. I mean, when they were singing Enter Sandman at the end, that was awesome. But let me just ask you, I'm all over the place, as you can tell, because I'm just thinking of shit to say.
it was an exciting weekend. I don't blame you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking of crap to say just here and there and there and here, if you will. But have you ever seen a choke job that Texas A&M pulled against themselves at UCLA? 38-10. How the hell are you go? Well, actually, 44-10. How the hell are you going to lose a 44-10 lead with 2 minutes of change left in the third quarter? How is that possible?
You know what? Off the top of my head, I can't think of one, not clearly at least. But you're right. That allowing them to come from behind to win that game. And then, of course, the fake spike a la Dan Marino was superb. But you can't give those games away. But you know what? It just happens. It happens to show that teams in those conferences, what's that, the – And Texas A&M is in the SEC, right?
SEC West.
Yeah, so I'm surprised that they don't, you know, play a little bit better defense than that, you know, especially in the conference that they're in. But
right. Yeah,
you can't give up games like that. And it's gonna that may be a telltale situation for the entire year. You hope that they can clean that up, you know, as the season goes along and they compete within the conference. If they want to go ahead and make
right.
a bowl game, because they can't lay another egg like that. They just can't do it.
Right.
I got another situation that was like that was also Indiana, Ohio State. I mean, we all knew that Ohio State was that much of a better team. But, guys, they were up 21-20, and we know that Indiana was able to give fits to a couple of, as a matter of fact, both Penn State and Ohio State last year. But, Ohio State just decided we want to go ahead and play now. And score, what, 29 straight? Yeah, so you can't handle situations. But that, there was another word I completely forgot about that also sums up this past weekend, scheduling, especially out-of-conference scheduling. It's something that we're starting to see over the past couple of years. At first, it was just more or less, you know, to have these teams play on neutral sites for these universities to get money that way, especially when it comes to two teams that are in neighboring states. To play in a city that's kind of like a central city on a neutral site, for them to go ahead and get this money. But now with these conferences scared that someone, a representative from their conference, won't make the playoffs, they're making better schedules too, which are creating better situations, especially in week one. And we're about to see another matchup this coming Saturday in Ohio State and Oklahoma, which causes which caused these great matchups to come out and be. But, you know, I'm thankful that that's the case, because you're right now, because these teams want to make the playoffs, they're not scheduling North Dakota State, which they're probably kind of scared to play them too, because they don't want to lose to them.
Right.
They're not scheduling Steve Austin. They're not scheduling, you know, A&T or Bethune-Cookman. So we're getting better football in week one and more watchable football in week one and more compelling games in week one. But the one matchup and the one upset that we haven't talked about, Liberty and Baylor.
Yes.
My God.
Hell yeah.
Talk about another embarrassing situation for the Big 12. Oh, not as bad spread-wise as Howard UNLV, even though it was kind of questioned why wasn't the case with Baylor being that much better than UNLV, as you would expect. But for Liberty to go into Baylor, into Waco, their quarterback airing out for almost 500 yards and give it to Baylor like that, that puts another black eye on the Big 12 conference in terms of whether or not you need to have a representative in the playoffs or not. And if Oklahoma loses to Ohio State, big, that's a knockout blow. That's a knockout blow. There is nothing the Big 12 can say in terms of, hey, we need to go ahead and add somebody in the playoffs unless Oklahoma State trounces Oklahoma this year. That's the only way that I can see it happening.
Right. And they had to do it twice because they got the conference championship game back now.
Yes,
so which
that's right.
Weird, which would be weird and awkward, especially if Oklahoma turns the favor the following week, which they're capable of.
Exactly.
That's what shocked me, man, that when Baylor lost to Liberty, it's shocking and hilarious at the same time. Shocking for obvious reasons, but hilarious because, I don't know if you know this, but Baylor's former AD is now the AD at Liberty. McGraw. Yeah.
That's his redemption song for real?
For real. It's funny as hell, isn't it? I mean, Ian McGraw was let go doing that, the whole sexual assault scandal that happened at Baylor. Of course, Art Briles got fired. The president got reassigned and demoted, and eventually he ended up quitting. Ian McGraw, the same Ian McGraw is now at Liberty, and his new school will be there. Hilarious.
That's why I say it's this redemption song, because, of course, for those that don't know, Liberty is basically Jerry Falwell, or is it the other TV evangelist?
It's Jerry Falwell School. It's Jerry Falwell, if I'm not mistaken.
It's his university. So, basically, he's been forgiven of whatever sins he had at Baylor and was allowed to go to Liberty. Oh, my God. That's hilarious. That's hilarious on so many levels. But yeah,
that's freaking funny. Oh. But I had just one more thing to say, and you can add on if you want. I mean, we touched upon Maryland and Texas already. But I was, to your point, I was thinking a lot about Charlie Strong. These same guys are strong recruiters. This is supposed to be the breakout year for Texas, and I firmly believe Charlie Strong did not leave the Cup. The Cup of Bear, he left some dudes behind. He left some good players. The same freshmen that he recruited are now juniors and some seniors, and a few sophomores. I mean, they're fairly young, and this is the year that Texas is supposed to be really good. And part of me wondered about, shit, I guess, like, did they want Charles Strong to be around so that Charles Strong get the credit for winning with the players that he recruited? Now, I understand, again, I understand that you can't, and I said this last year, you can't be losing to Kansas. I understand that. I totally understand that. So, I mean, you're not going to get an argument from me on that. But I just felt like the way he was so unfairly treated throughout his tenure, I mean, he was like behind the eight ball when he stepped his foot on the campus. It's just, I don't want to say gratifying, but because you hate to see a guy that is a guy lose the way Tom Herman did to Maryland. That's not Tom Herman's fault in terms of the stuff that went on with Charlie Strong, obviously. But they, being the second boosters, administration, fans, media, they wanted Tom Herman for a long time. They were waiting for Charlie Strong to get his ass fired so they could hurry Tom Herman in town, and this is what they got. I know it's the first game, but that's hilarious. That's hilarious. Losing to Maryland the way they did at home was funny.
That's still supposed to be a winnable game. I don't care, first game or not. That's supposed to be a winnable game for Texas, and it's kind of interesting because I'm sorry to keep talking about them because I know that they've got a lot of shine this week, but it's kind of full circle with what happened between Howard and UNLV. And the reason why I bring that up, it's full circle, but it's also the inverse with that situation, because I felt as though Gary Harrell, who was the former head coach, you know, known as Flea, former wide receiver at Howard, was the head coach over at Howard for like the past 6 years. He had some rough times over at Howard. Matter of fact, if I remember correctly, they finished the year 1-10 last year. But, you know, he felt as though that with a couple of new recruits that he had coming in and soon to be the best back in the conference, that they'll be able to compete, but he wasn't given a chance to do so this year. But now you bring in God, his name just escapes me that quick, and that's bad.
Mike London.
Mike London. Mike London, yes. You bring in Mike London, who, of course, has pedigree from his previous stints at Richmond and at Virginia. And he wins, you know, he beats an FBS school with Flea's guys. You know, Kalen Newton was a Flea recruit. So it begs to differ, you know, is it necessarily the talent pool that's the problem at the FCS level, or is it the coaching that's the issue? Because who's to say that Flea would have gone out there and coached his team to a win, but it's the exact same team that we know Mike London, who can coach on the FBS level, takes the same team out to UNLV and they win. So who's to say that, you know, a lot of these FBS coaches, if they were to go to the FCS level, that they wouldn't be successful with the same type of talent? You know, that's why I'm going to ask that question. Do we really celebrate Mike London for that win? Or should, you know, Flea Harrell get a little piece of that too, because those are his players? You know, and I just find that to be curious. And that's something I've always wondered about second, well, 1AA, if you will, or even Division II guys, if you would have had some of these former Division I guys to come down and coach these guys up a little bit.
Right. And that's the question. That's a perfect question for the Double S Project Facebook page. So I'm sure that a lot of our fellow Aggies would love to chime in on that and provide their own perspective on that, because that's a good point. One last bit on college football, full week one, as I keep calling it. Speaking of coaching job security and on hot seats, going back to the Texas A&M game, I'm afraid for Kevin Sumlin. I really am. He's, by all accounts, is one of the good guys in college football. There are not many black coaches on the FBS, on the FBS level, particularly in the Power Five.
Exactly.
And you already had a board reader come out on Facebook like a little petulant child and call for his head so early in the game. It doesn't look good. I was hoping for the best when they went up 44-10 before he went to a coaching brain freeze and refused to run the ball and, you know, allowed those guys back. And of course, obviously allowed UCLA back to the game to eventually come from behind, 24 points down and win. Do you see Coach Sumlin surviving the season? If can he even make it through the season at this point?
I hope so. And this is something that I kind of briefly talked about on social media over the past couple of days. We talk about Colin Kaepernick and him being blackballed, and the same people who are boycotting, you know, the NFL because of him being blackballed are the same. Some of them are also watching games on Saturday, not realizing that black coaches get blackballed.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, I'm going to need you to go ahead and kind of take that into perspective as well. And that's why I'm a little afraid, just like you said, when you talk about black coaches on the FBS level, you know, if they have a shorter leash for whatever reason. I have no idea why that's the case, you know. And then you talk about programs in certain states, and we all know what those states are. A lot of them are southern states, state of Texas.
That's right.
Louisiana, Florida, Georgia,
Alabama
especially. You don't win there, and you don't do it within 3 to 4 years, you out of there. And in some cases, you might not even get a look anyplace else. And I mean anyplace else. Now, you may not want to take a job at a lower level. That's on you. But a lot of times, on that FCS level, FBS level, I'm sorry, you won't even get another look. You won't get another opportunity. It saddens me. So, you know, I hope for his sake that he can turn it around and at least get 7 wins and go to a bowl game. Because if he doesn't, he's probably done. You know, this game will not be forgotten. Even though it's out of conference, it won't be forgotten. He's going to have to turn it around and turn it around quick. They probably have a cupcake this week, but once they start getting into conference play, you got to show up that defense. We know that they can score points, but they're going to show up short that defense
ball.
For him.
And
they can run the ball, you know. So I'm hoping for the best for him, but I'm scared. I'm really scared.
I mean, part of me has to wonder a lot of it, like, because I was listening to what was formerly called SiriusXM, like College Sports Nation, SiriusXM Radio, that's now called ESPU, ESPNU Radio. Which was slick, by the way. Very slick on that part. But I was listening to a show called The Full Ride with Chris Childers. He made the point with UCLA coach Rick Neuheisel that he believes that someone would get a job within 5 minutes if he got fired from Texas A&M. And I hope he's right. I hope he's right. Because, again, someone is one of the few good guys in college football. He knows how to coach offense. He's not an idiot. Okay? We all do stupid things all the time. I mean, I've seen great coaches do stupid things at some times. But in this case, not running the football after they're up by 34 points in 2 minutes and change nothing good from the third quarter. But that's not here nor there. The point is that Childers and many others like him believe that someone would be rehired somewhere in a New York minute. And I hope he's right. I hope that they're right. I'm like you, though. I'm very skeptical. I mean, I'm sure Charlie Strong landed back on his feet, but it's out of power, but it's out of Group of Five school. Nothing wrong with Group of Five school. South Florida is a good school, but still, and like in a great conference like the American Athletic Conference, which is like the Power Six almost. But nevertheless, I want to see these brothers get more opportunities like their white counterparts, which I'm glad that some of the white counterparts do get second chances. I just don't think it's fair, but it is. But again, I'm hoping that Chris Childers was correct about someone getting another job within 5 minutes and A&M was holding up and firing, or stupid to fire him, like to turn on one's perspective. But hell, I mean, my school could use him. They could use a guy like Sumlin, but I'm just hoping he's right. But I'm just skeptical, and I'm really afraid. So I guess that's the story.
Yeah, see, that's my thought. Yeah, and I'm just going to say this real quick. That's just my thought. Would he be hired real quick as a head coach or as a coordinator? Because we know that, you know, once again, he can coach offense, but would someone entrust their program to him? So that, that's the thing I want to see. Well, actually, I don't want to see it. I want him to succeed at Texas A&M. That's what I want him to do.
Yes, I did too. I just have a feeling that if it's another 8-5 season, and you know, I know I'm kind of belaboring the point. I'm stuck on A&M for a minute, but let's just be clear about something. People at A&M and schools like A&M should just shut the bleep up. I mean, you're not Alabama, you're not the University of Texas, you're not Auburn, you're not LSU. You're A&M. If Ben wins, a 9-10-win season should be considered awesome. Okay, you're not winning the SEC West anytime soon because one, Nick Saban, and Auburn has resources too, and Alabama has LSU. You're not winning the SEC West, and you're not definitely not, which means you're definitely not winning the SEC anytime soon. He doesn't suck. He's not going 6-6, 7-5. He's averaging 8-9 wins a season. And you know what though? It's similar things that happened to Mike London up in Virginia his first year. Sometimes you're a victim of your own success. Someone got into town with Johnny Manziel, won 10 games, was the talk of the SEC, and they beat Alabama that year at Alabama, in Tuscaloosa rather. And even though they've gone 8-5 since, I mean, it's not like they're terrible. But I just get sick and tired of these places, these schools have unrealistic expectations. Am I a little biased in Sumlin's case? Perhaps, because I like Sumlin a lot. I just wish that people would let go of unrealistic expectations. Because who's going to lead that program? Who's really going to get A&M over that whatever hump that they have in their mind? I mean, good luck with that. So
there are a lot of programs like that in college football that suffer from that way back in the day syndrome, that they're stuck on the success that they may have had in the 70s, the 60s, even the 50s, and they're longing for those days, not realizing that the other programs in your conference that have let you, dude, just be happy with those 8 wins. Be happy with those 9 wins that you're going through a bowl game. Because unless your fortunes change quickly and you can impress some of those higher recruits to come to your program, deal with what you got, bro. Because you could very easily be 3-7, you know, 2-8, and be in a lot worse situation than what you currently are.
Yeah, exactly. It actually, go ask the San Francisco 49ers when they did all about the way they did. And how about that for a second, as a segue? The NFL season.
Yes.
Look, 2017 NFL season. So what we're going to do first, we're going to go by Division I just like we did last year and the year before that. And
all right.
We'll go by divisions. I'll give my division winners. You give your division winners, wild cards or whatever. And let's see if we can laugh at each other's predictions like we do every year. I'm about to start with my predictions that some may go wrong, but I don't think this will go on. Let's start with the AFC. We all know that New England's going to moonwalk them dash to show another division title. I mean, who's in the division? We got my starting dude named Jay Cutler out of retirement. So Jimmy Jack can set the world on fire. You got the Buffalo Bills. We don't know how to make the playoffs again after, I don't know, how many years? Like 20 years, seems like?
Yeah.
Maybe a little less. And what the hell is the Jets doing at quarterback? Me and you and I, rather, my brother, Previn, all those cats made, we could put up better passing stats than the cats that the Jets have on their staff right now. It's just terrible. It's just hilariously terrible. their acronym, like their name, the Jets, is actually an acronym for just end the season. It's just ridiculous.
Oh, wow.
It's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. You like how I did it? I came up with that about a year ago. I'm so proud of myself for that. But I assume you have New England winning the same division as well.
Oh, yeah. Not at all. Not at all. And I hate to be boring because I know statistically about 4 to 5 teams are replaced in the playoffs every year. But my picks don't reflect that at all. And you'll see what I'm talking about in a minute. But, yeah, AFC East, I got New England winning it. It's hands down.
Right. I don't know why I even asked the question, but, you know, I had to. Had asked a question.
Yeah.
But we're on. I got my beloved Steelers winning. I think that, we got the renown. We had known as Martavis Bryant back in the fold. That's our deep threat. Take the pressure off of one.
Antonio Bryant.
Antonio Brown. I just got a brain freeze tonight. Maybe I'm still tired. But at any rate. He, Le'Veon Bell in the backfield with Big Ben Roethlisberger slinging the rock.
Mm-hmm.
Defense is improving. That's all I need is an improving defense. We got the division. I'm really intrigued with Cincinnati. I'm really intrigued with those cats because they got offensive talent, but the offensive line is thin. They didn't resign Wentworth.
Mm-hmm.
They, they lost a couple of the injury. The defense is nasty, but they're going to take a hit with Vontaze Burfict going bonehead in the preseason, even though that was an illegal hit, but he should have known better. He's out for the first three, four games. That may hurt them.
I thought it was six, but was it reduced?
Oh, six? Six? I thought that was three, four. Well,
it was six.
Either way,
It's four.
Okay. But nevertheless.
No, wait, I'm sorry. It's five. They gave him five.
Oh,
they gave him five for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. That's about a quarter of the season. But I really think that Cincinnati has some great young, and I think that Vontaze Burfict suspension will hurt them a bit. Not a whole lot, but I still see him being Baltimore week one. Speaking of which, I don't know how good a shape Joe Flacco is going to be in. He missed the whole preseason, as you know, with a back injury. I don't know how they're going to be. They still have a hell of a defense, but that's going to be too bad. That's going to be wasted by more of the offense. So it's like, you can't count out Baltimore. They're so well run as an organization, but I don't think they have enough offense to overcome that, it's particularly if Joe Flacco is less than 100% start the season. And as much as I bag on. Well, hell, I was going to say, as much as I bag on Cleveland Browns, they do have young talent, so I'm going to bag on them anyway. I mean, you let go Joe Hayden, and I get it. Joe Hayden is not healthy, hasn't been as healthy as he was in recent years. He's scheduled to make $11 million. Thinking my Steelers swiped him up on the waiver, off the waiver wire. That's about secondary. But I do like the fact that Cleveland has some great talent, young talent. I love Myles Garrett, even though he could play with more of a motor and not take plays off. But I also love the Jabril Peppers pick. I loved it a lot. Mm. I think he's something another Ed Reed like. He was a jack of all trades. Not Ed Reed, I'm sorry, but Sean Taylor. He's going to be another Sean Taylor. I think he's like, because he can play at both safety positions. He can play a linebacker if you need to, and he can lay the wood. He can really lay the wood. And so I think that he's going to be a player I'm going to be interested in watching the entire season. But they have nice talent, and they'll win more than one game. I give Cleveland maybe 4 or 5 games. I think that as long as they're patient with Hugh Jackson and the rookie quarterback, DeShone Kizer, who I think has a lot of talent, I think that this is the beginning. Again, I hate Cleveland, but I think this is the beginning of a little turnaround here. So as long as the front office, and granted, and we all know that Cleveland, in terms of the front office and coaching staff, is probably the most slackest team. It's perhaps the blackest team in the league,
yes,
by a long shot. So there's best interest there as well. But I just think that they need to be patient. Let the process play mm-hmm. out and see where it's at. Because they still have a whole load of draft picks the following year, like next year as well. So, I mean, the sky's the limit for Cleveland. There's light at the end of the proverbial tunnel. I know it's been a long time, but I think the future is bright for the Browns, but this process is going to really start this year. So what are your thoughts on the AFC North, sir?
AFC North, like you said, actually I'm going to go the inverse on that. I'm going to steal the old Chris Rock line. You say the sky is the limit for Cleveland. I'm going to say the limit's the sky. That was wrong of me. I shouldn't have said that. But I like you.
Nice.
That's not nice. I know. But
no.
I like you.
That's nice, though. Go ahead.
Well, you can't go wrong with the classics. But I agree with you. I think that Cleveland has a lot of young talent. Once again, I hope that they're patient with you and that GM that's over there, and that they allow them to build this team and construct this team in a very difficult conference with division. I'm sorry, because you have teams in that division, like Cincinnati, Baltimore, and Pittsburgh, which have been competitive and have won titles in that division over the past couple of years. So I'm going to ask the brass in Cleveland to allow this team to build and get to where they need to go, because the foundation is there. They were competitive last year. And I like you, agree, they are not going to win one game this year. You know how difficult it is to only win one game in 2 years in the NFL? That's insane. Yeah. And hopefully they'll avoid as many injuries as they had last year. Even with the injuries, there were a lot of games in which there were close games that they had. You know, so I expect them to win about three to four games and still be competitive in the ones that they lose. Cincinnati, I don't know if I trust them in their injury situation yet, because they always tend to give me two important guys to get hurt on both sides of the ball. So if they can show me that they can stay healthy for an entire year, maybe. But I expect them to be a little bit better than Baltimore, because I don't know what Baltimore is going to do offensively yet. There are people out there that like Terrence West and Danny Woodhead back there in that backfield. But that quarterback situation, I don't know about Flacco. And I want to see whether or not he's going to be capable of competing hurt. And that defense ain't that old Baltimore defense that we know, but they're getting better as well. But I don't think that they're as good as and will be able to compete with the team that I have within the division, and that's the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have the three best skill players in offense in the NFL, or I would say the best three. You have them combined with Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, and Le'Veon Bell. Then, of course, you add Montavious Bryant to that situation. If he's the Montavious of a couple of years ago, but I don't want to get too high on Pittsburgh, because I got high on them last year. Even though they did go to the conference title game, I got high on them last year, predicting them they would win 13, which they didn't. But they did go to the conference title game, which I did predict. But I expect this team to be competitive again and win a division. And the Joe Hayden pickup was, of course, so they can go ahead and compete against the New England Patriots. We all know that.
Right, that was all that was. That was the move. That's New England Patriot move. That's why I got my eye on the Patriots. Even though the Patriots, I forgot to mention this, even though the Patriots will be missing Wes Welker, which is a huge injury, it's Tom Brady's one of his favorite like security blankets. I still think New England, they'll still think that team, particularly my Steelers, would have to make the move that they made in the secondary. And they made more moves, too, as well, acquiring that kid out of Tampa Bay after they signed TJ Mack from Denver. But you know, at the same time, you know, you have to stop Tom Brady. So you gotta either go out to the pass or have people in the secondary who can pick off balls or force turnovers. So there you go. Going from one of the strongest divisions in football to one of the weakest, the AFC South. Now Tennessee's gotten a lot of love, right? I mean, because I like the way Marcus Mariota has been progressing as a passer. I love the Marcus Mariota as a running back. Their offensive line has been playing better. The defense is getting a little bit better, but that's why I'm holding out on them a little bit. So that's the edge close to Houston. I just feel bad for Texas fans in the sense that if they had a quarterback who was worth a damn, the Texans had a quarterback who was halfway decent, they could be elite. They already have it in an elite defense. They have one of the best defenses in the NFL, one of the three best defenses. Denver and I think Seattle, Seattle would be the other. Oh, I'll throw in Baltimore and make it our top four. But they got too much talent defensively to not be elite. And plus, the skilled players on that battle offense either. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins is a stud. Even with a crappy-ass quarterback play from Brock Osweiler and some other cat years before that, DeAndre got his stats, man. He was average. Yeah. I mean, he was what, like 80, 90 catches per season? And he got paid, and rightfully so. To put up all those stats with all the sorry-ass quarterbacks, they had to throw the ball in. Who threw him the ball. But for that reason, I think that they should, even though the Texans probably won't, they should start Deshaun Watson. I think they'll need to go to Deshaun Watson in a year. I think Deshaun Watson had a pretty good preseason. I don't think that head coach Bill O'Brien trusts him right away, which is fine because, you know, he's trying to win now. He's not trying to be hollered at a rookie. You know, and Tom Savage knows Bill O'Brien's offense really, really well. But we all know what Savage's ceiling is. It's pretty damn low. There's no disrespect to Savage, but he is what he is. I think Deshaun Watson, I think his ceiling is much higher. I think the sky's the limit with this kid. He's the same guy, and I know this is college, and I hate doing these college comparisons, but the dude lit up Alabama's defense twice. And arguably should have won national championships. But nevertheless, I mean, he's just playing on the big stage. He's fearless. He's a lot like Cam Newton. He's fearless. So I think that eventually they will go to Watson going forward in the middle of the season. May not be right away, but I still think they're in good hands. I think once Deshaun Watson develops, I think Houston will really become elite. That's just how I'm feeling about that. But I really feel bad for Andrew Luck getting out of Indianapolis. They've done nothing to surround this talent. The offensive line sucks. I mean, if you and I were defensive ends, opposed to defensive ends, we'd rack up 5 sacks apiece against them. They're that bad. Okay?
Of course I would.
Yeah, there you go. And
my swivel is nice.
I was thinking of the part. I mean, Andrew Luck won't start the season. He probably won't be healthy for a long time, fully healthy for a long time. It's just too bad. It's just really too bad because, I mean, he's a good kid, good young man, and he just deserves better. It's just unfortunate. But at any rate, I have Houston winning the division. And Tennessee competing for a wild card spot, but they won't be quite there yet. They're 1 year away, I think, from wild card contention and division contention as well.
Now, God, it's interesting. You didn't even talk about Jacksonville, and I don't understand why, and neither will I.
Why?
So I'm moving on.
Yeah.
Exactly. God, who's that third team in that division? You talked about Houston, talked about Indianapolis. Yeah, it's weird. Remember how highly touted that 2012 quarterback class was? Especially with those first two picks of Andrew Luck and RG3. And now both of them are shells of themselves with only one still left in the league. And he may not even play all 16 games this year. It's sad to see that, you know. And Jim Irsay, the management that's going on in Indianapolis, is not doing whatever they need to do in order to help improve that team. Even though I would love to see, yes, it is. But I would love to see Grover Stewart, the defensive tackle out of Albany State. I want to see how he looks on that D line. I really do. You have the one great Robert Mathis from Alabama A&M leave to be replaced potentially by another HBCU D lineman and Stewart. I just want to see how that transition happens and how he competes. But yeah, I don't see that team competing for a division title, let alone a playoff spot. Like you, once again, I agree. Tennessee, they have one of the best O lines in the league, top five easy. That running tandem of Henry and DeMarco Murray is going to be great again. Mariota, once again, is improving. If they can get God, what's that receiver, the young guy for Tennessee? You know, that's the thing. No one knows necessarily who Tennessee's receivers are, but they're playing well with Mariota. And that's phenomenal. And that defense is getting a little bit better. And, my God, Arakpo, who was a dumpster fire leaving Washington, has rejuvenated himself and got 9.5 sacks last year in Tennessee. I expect him to continue to at least stay on that path of consistency and helping that defense out. And I actually had Tennessee making it to the playoffs as a wild card team, slightly behind the division winners and the Houston Texans. I don't want to reiterate what you said, but the one thing I hope happens to see Watson come in and replace Tom Nacho Man Savage as the quarterback, hopefully by week six, and give that team just a little bit more of a boost. I don't know if he'll necessarily be that much greater of a passer in terms of yardage than Savage, but I think his ability and play and athleticism will be that much better than Savage in helping run that offense.
Right. Exactly. So I feel you on that. And to round up the AFC, this is a little bit tough for me to predict. Oakland, Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
I changed my mind so many times between those two squads. I mean, I know that KC has almost all their guys back, minus Jamal Charles, obviously. I really love the draft pick, the quarterback of the future, and Mahomes. As I'm calling Holmes Jr. And he played well in the preseason. It's obvious that he's going to be the next the heir apparent to Alex Smith. And I think I see a young, dare I say, Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And you know, I just think that I really do. I think that the Kansas City's future is bright. I just like Oakland. I like the fact that you have a guy and the quarterback, Derek Carr, coming back with a vengeance. The defense is improving, but they're not all the way there yet. They're not all the way there yet, but they're improving. And so I got them by an edge, by a hair over Kansas City. And I like the Chargers. They're improving. I got them coming in third over Denver. Yes, I got Denver finishing in the cellar. They have a hell of a defense. The offense is none to write home about. And
no.
I think that's going to – and plus the internal strife with T.J. Ward's departure, a lot of players were mad about that. I don't know how that's going to play in Vance Joseph's first year in Denver. But I really – this division is tough, man. But it's so tough. I see San Diego. They should have kept the ass in San Diego. But I see the Chargers, LA Chargers improving. But I don't see Denver. It wouldn't shock me if Denver's in the cellar to finish the season. Let's put it that way.
Now, the LA Chargers, as scrappy as they are, have always been injury riddled. And that's the one thing that concerns me about that team. If they can somehow stay healthy, I can see them potentially end up finishing in third place in that division over Denver, but I have Denver finishing in third, probably at around 8-8. The one thing that I disagree with you about in this division, of course, I have Kansas City as a team winning the division. The reason why is because I don't trust Oakland's defense just yet, and I'm not completely sold on Marshawn. Marshawn didn't have a fantastic year his last year in Seattle. And part of that was due to injury. But, you know, a year older and a year out of football, you know, I don't know how much that's going to help that offense. But, of course, Derek Carr is going to be Derek Carr. And they do have great wide receiver play out of the biggest scrub, wide receiver scrub in the league, according to Richard Sherman, Michael Crabtree, and Amari Cooper. That tandem worked fantastic with Derek Carr. Is it David Carr? Am I calling the wrong name?
Derek.
It is Derek. Okay, I want to make sure, because in the back of my head, I hear someone else messing up his name, and I was scared that I was going to mess it up. But as much as I like that offense, that defense, even though they're getting a little bit better, I'm still a little bit afraid of. And last year, Kansas City has had a way of scoring every which way that they could, which is scoring points through the run game, the pass game, special teams, trick plays. Kansas City and Andy Reid just know how to win at least 10 games. That's what Andy Reid will give you. Andy Reid equates to 10 games a year. And I think 10 games in that division will be just enough in order for them to win it. And I got Oakland coming through as the other wild card team in the AFC.
So you basically have, just to recap, you got KC winning the division, right?
Yeah.
And again, I flip-flop back and forth between the two. They're so close. And I really like both squads. It's good to see that Oakland-Kansas City rivalry rekindled like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's going to be fun to watch this year. So, speaking of rivalry rekindling, even though it never really fizzled out, let's go to NFC East. I mean, it's a two-team race between the Giants and the Cowboys. And I don't think it's going to be even close. I like the fact that Philly is improving, but they're still a couple years away. I don't know what the hell they're doing, Washington. I mean, no disrespect to you. All the respect to you.
Not at
man.
All.
I love your Washington squad. I know my dad is a huge fan of Washington, but I don't know what the hell. I don't know what the hell is going on there. But we'll get to them in a minute. I'll let you have the floor on that, because I know you have a hell of a lot to say about that. But,
yeah, I'm going to try to keep that as condensed as possible.
Yeah, there you go. But I think that I have the Giants coming out on top of this division, dude, simply because Dallas, they played with a third or fourth place schedule last year. And I know you can't blame them for the teams they played. It's not their fault. I get that. But the road's going to be tougher. They get Green Bay. They get, you know, all the division winners. They get Green Bay. They get Seattle. They get Atlanta this season. And then, of course, they get the NFC South, which is always tough. But do they get the NFC South? No, they don't. I'm sorry.
No, they get the AFC West. Yeah.
They get the AFC West, the NFC West, yes. They get both West, I think. And I think it's going to be a tougher road to hoe. So basically, you got the same teams last year being replaced with Seattle, Arizona, and of course the entire AFC West. That's going to be tough. That's going to be hella tough. But nevertheless, I what will hurt the most, I think, in Dallas is Ezekiel Elliott being suspended for 6 games. That's going to really hurt. And I know people are saying, notably Skip Bayless, Running Steel, which is a great show, by the way, on FS1. Monday through Friday, it's 9:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. Like the job that he does at Shannon Sharp, who I love, by the way, because he hates Dallas as much as we do, so I could get with that. but the thing is that I don't believe that the tandem of Alfred Morris and McFadden are going to make up for Ezekiel Elliott. That's not going to happen. I don't care how good the offensive line is. And Dallas' offensive line is like the best in football by far. It's not even close. I don't think they're going to match Ezekiel's production. But this is all going to depend upon one, Dak Prescott. This is going to be truly his team the first half of the season, almost the first half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And he, just, and we're going to know if this, if he was a one-year wonder or if he's a, he was just a product of having a great running game. I'm hoping, I hate Dallas, but for his sake, I hope he does well because he seems like a good young brother. With a great head on the shoulders, very humble. I love humble guys in that setting like that. But I think they're gonna come up a little bit short. Some people don't even have to make it a playoff. I'm not gonna go that far. I think they'll get a wild card.
Oh wow!
I think that the Giants they own Dallas, and with the addition they made defensively, and I know that they still have a running game on offense, but Brandon Marshall to go along with Odell Beckham Jr. And Odell is not healthy. He may not even start the season, which makes the acquisition of Brandon Marshall even more important and vital.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have other wideouts like on that squad. I forget the young guy from last year who really did well.
Shepard. Sterling Shepard.
Yeah, exactly. So, to go along with that, and Eli Manning, you know, hand it back in the pocket. If they get a running game, they'll win this division by at least 2 to 3 games. If they get a running game, but I don't think they'll ever have a running game. So I get them eking out Dallas by maybe a game or two. But yeah, it's going to be the Giants' division to lose the season.
Now, I guess. Well, I know we see it differently because I see 3 games separating first place from last place in this division.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a very tight race. We have the worst team in the division finishing with 7 wins and the best team finishing with 10 wins. So it's going to be real tight. And there's a possibility where the game goes the wrong way, somebody else ends up winning this division. That's how tight I have it. But the things I don't trust from each team, with all of the additions that Philadelphia has made, I don't know if I necessarily trust their receivers just yet. The addition of Alshon Jeffrey
mm-hmm.
is good, but I don't know how much it really helps. And as I need him to stay consistent or stay healthy for 16 weeks. How about that?
Right.
The Garrett Blunt, another great addition. Even though Zach Brown said he got something for him for week one, he said that LeGarrette Blount don't even want to see him come week one. I wish you were able to hear the audio for the comments in which he made. But statistically, he was kind of right if you looked at LeGarrette Blount's rushing yards against that Buffalo defense last year, even though I'm not saying that Buffalo and Washington's defense is the same, far from different.
Sure.
But I digress. Like I said, I got question marks about the receiving game and how consistent that good defense of Philadelphia can be, because they were a top 5 defense last year, but yet they got swept by Washington. You know, and as you know, Washington is my squad, and I want to sit here and not, you know, well, I don't want to sit here and talk badly about them for a long period of time, because I know we don't have forever, and I can sure do it in forever. But things that concern me about Washington, actually both sides of the ball. As great of a passer as Cousins is, I want to see what this receiving core does because it's completely new and completely different. Running game has not been a consistent one over the past couple of years, ever since the Shanahans have left. They don't necessarily need a thriving running game in order to succeed, but I would like to see a resemblance of one. Especially with this passing game still looking to get off the floor, even though the receivers that they have are young, but they're perceived to be talented. I want to see if they can make that step, especially with Jordan Reed being there with them, and whether or not Jordan Reed can stay healthy, that's another thing too. Wow, Junior Gallette is back. Junior Gallette is finally playing. After 2 years of waiting for him and his Achilles situation, he finally gets a chance to play. But once again, other injuries on that D-line and the linebacking core, I kind of question. And then, my God, Sue Cravens, in the late decision that he decided to make to tell the team peace out, literally, and with him and his retirement, what are the Skins going to do with the safety spot? You know, you have D'Angelo Hall, who won't be ready. He's on the pup list and won't be able to come back for about a month. So I want to know what this team is going to look like in the first couple of weeks, because these first 4 weeks are going to be very telling. Versus Philadelphia, versus Kansas City, San Francisco, and the Rams. And with San Fran and the Rams, with the head coach being former offensive coordinators of the organization, that's going to be interesting as well. So you got to watch those. But I have the Skins in third. Second, I have Dallas. The Ezekiel Elliott suspension concerns me, and the concerns me for this reason. I think I've been on this show a lot over the past couple of years saying this one thing. You can get running yards in Dallas because, of course, they have one of the best O-lines in the sport. But the problem is they couldn't get any touchdown production or big play production out of that running back spot. And now they're right back to Darian McFadden and Alfred Morris. Now, Alfred Morris was capable of having big plays in D.C., but he got to Dallas and didn't get a chance to get a lot of carries. If he doesn't get a lot of carries in Dallas, he's not going to be that effective, in my personal opinion, again. But you got to remember, McFadden is comfortable in that offense, so it's a possibility he may get the bulk of the carries. And I'm wondering whether or not the teams have the tape on Dak this year or not. But it's a possibility that, you know, he may hit that sophomore slump. And as much as I don't want to pick the Giants to win the division, I think they do. But the biggest fear that I have of theirs, they're talented at the receiver spot, but their running game, Paul Perkins, who? And also, I'm concerned about the tackles at New York as well, because Eli has a problem with standing up over the past couple of years. He's been hit a lot, and I'm concerned about that. But for whatever reason, man, they've had the capability of playing Dallas well. And where do they start the year off this year in Dallas? If they can go ahead and keep that string running, they can go ahead and get an early start on a team that's going to be Zeke-less for 6 weeks potentially.
Yeah, I feel you on that. Let's move on to the NFC North Division. I got three more divisions to go. This is going to be pretty short. Green Bay's winning the division.
Next. Green Bay wins the division. Minnesota's competitive, but Green Bay wins the division. Next.
Exactly. There you go. That was quick and easy. if only the ones were easy as well. But speaking of which, this is going to be a tough one, the NFC South. This is why I think this is tricky. This is very tricky. As much love as Atlanta's getting for that record-breaking offense last season, I don't think they're going to recover from the choke job that they laid in Super Bowl 51 last season. I don't know how they can recover from that. You're up 28-3 in the third quarter, and you lose. But anyway, I don't think they're going to recover from that. I don't think Cam Newton fully 100% in Carolina. I love the draft picks. I love Christian McCaffrey. I think he's going to be a stud. I know people are calling the white Reggie Bush, but that's disrespectful. I think it's going to be better than Reggie Bush. That's just my opinion. As long as I'm running in between the tackles, I think McCaffrey's going to be great. I like getting back Travis Benjamin. I really like the fact that gives Cam Newton another weapon. I like Chris Samuels' pick out of Ohio State. Defense is better, and the defense has looked better in this preseason. But I don't think Cam Newton's fully healthy, man. And, if Cam Newton's not fully healthy, I don't think Carolina could do but so much. And last I checked in New Orleans, they still don't play defense in New Orleans. So it's too bad for Drew Brees, which leaves me with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're going to be my NFC South winner. I like these guys. I like Tampa Bay a lot. I really like Jameis Winston's development as a quarterback. I like the fact that they acquired DeSean Jackson to go along with Mike Evans.
Mm-hmm.
I think the running back will be better this year. The little bowling ball there behind the offensive line. As long as Winston continues to minimize his mistakes, he played well last year. And I see the pendulum just ticking up a little bit. I think I see the hill, if you will, the Tampa Bay going up that proverbial hill in terms of wins per season, the last two seasons, I guess. So, you know, the defense is playing better. They're getting better talent on defense. T.J. Ward will really help Tampa Bay secondary. And they'll be playing for a mean because T.J. Ward is pissed off that he got traded, that he got dumped from Denver. He's going to be playing pissed off. Because that's going to really help the leadership along with Gerald McCoy on that defense. So I really think, and plus Tampa has an easier schedule. So I really see Tampa Bay. I think this is the time. I think this is the time to usurp Atlanta, cruise past the Panthers, and don't worry about the Saints because, again, the Saints do not play defense. As prolific as the offensive is in New Orleans, they don't play defense. So I got Tampa as my put up or shut up winning that division. And perhaps Carolina Panthers getting a wild card.
Mm. Now, this is where my concerns come in with the NFC South. Still probably miss Josh Norman in Carolina, but that secondary is a year older. And they brought back,
right.
Did they bring back Captain Merlin?
I don't know. I got to check.
I know they brought back one of their older corners to help out that young secondary, but I still don't see them, you know, making that push for a division title just yet. New Orleans, they just, like you said, they miss a defense. I like Tampa. Tampa is going to improve with a lot of the off-season acquisitions that they made. I like to call them Washington South with DeSean Jackson. And of course, my man Chris Baker. And then, of course, you add in T.J. Ward with that defense with Gerald McCoy, and they get a little bit better. Matter of fact, I'm thinking that they will go ahead and compete for a wild card with my other wild card team that I have in Dallas, but I don't think they do it just yet. And I have Atlanta winning the division again, but they're going to miss Mike Shanahan on that offensive side of the ball and calling plays and being able to call run plays. Well, Kyle Shanahan, yes, I'm sorry about that. They're going to miss Kyle. And even though he didn't call the best plays in the Super Bowl in that fourth quarter, he was capable of calling the right plays in order for them to go 13-3. And they're going to miss him. But I still have them winning 10 games and winning that division. I think that division is going to be tight, like the NFC East as well.
I totally agree. It's going to be very, very tight. So I got the winner winning 10 games. I think it's going to be that tight.
Exactly. For a while.
The NFC West. This is Seattle's division, hands down. I like Arizona. I like the fact that they were well coached by a dude who wears a Kangol hat. I love any old school cat who wears a Kangol hat. In this case, a hip white guy doing his thing. You don't see that Kangol these days, but God bless them both. But at any rate, I think Arizona, while very talented defensively, they're like Seattle light, but they're too old on offense. I think Carson Palmer, this baby is last 1 or 2 years, so we'll see him start in this league. Very for sure, this may be his last season. I like the running back, Johnson, that Johnson kid. I really like him. He's one of those unsung guys you don't really hear about, but David Johnson. He's a fantasy football machine. He can do it all. He can run, he can catch the football. Not as heralded as Le'Veon Bell and, you know, Ezekiel Elliott and those guys. But he can do it. But he can do the damn. He's talented. I just think they're older on offense. And unless they could package one more run for Larry Fitzgerald, for Carson Palmer, I see him looking the outside looking in as far as players. I see him at like 9-7 ish. Start to the end of the season. I'm gonna keep an eye out on LA, on the Rams. I love the Sammy Watkins acquisition. I want to see what Jared Goff does in the second year. They finally have an offensive-minded coach for your squad. And, you know, they got rid of Mr. 7-9 himself, Jeff Fisher, finally. But I want to see what Jared Goff does under this new coach. And if he improves with that defense, the defense is still stout in L.A. Even without the what's that kid's name?
Aaron Donald.
Even without him, even though they should sign him, they should take care of him because he's a stud. But I still think that they are stout defensively, more so with him than without him, obviously. But I think that the Rams, if Jared Goff takes the next big step, of course they still got Cal. The girly kid to go behind the offensive line. I think they're going to be very improved. They're going to be much improved, much improved. But they're a year or two away. So I got Seattle win this division by 2 or 3 games, and Arizona with 9-7. And the Rams, I give the Rams 7-9 or 8-8. I give them 8-8 actually.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Who knows what's going on in San Francisco, but. I think the Rams are going to surprise a lot of people this year. As long as Jared Goff takes the next step in his development, they're going to turn some heads.
I'm going to say this. I hope that Jared Goff takes that next step in his progression of running this offense, because that means that the Rams won't be chasing after Kirk Cousins once the season is over with. You're right, if they can go ahead and get that offense up and running, they can be dangerous. But I have them no better than third place in this division. Second place goes to Arizona, like you said. They are a little bit long in the tooth on the offensive side of the ball, but they're talented with David Johnson. Carson Palmer, once again, old, but he's capable of winning games. The thing is, they need to go ahead and find a complimentary receiver for Larry Fitzgerald, because John Brown wasn't capable of doing it. They drafted Chad Williams out of Grambling. He hasn't looked good in the preseason. None of the receivers outside of Larry has looked good in the preseason, so hopefully somebody can step it up for them. But their defense is still relatively talented, especially with Honey Badger and the rest of the guys on that defensive side of the ball. But like you said, the class of that division is the Seattle Seahawks. Once again, bad offensive line, but for whatever reason, Wilson finds a way to make it work. And that defense just got that much better after trading for Sheldon Richardson and having him in that front. My God, they're now going to be that much better in terms of stopping the run in a division that has Todd Gurley, Carlos Hyde, and David Johnson.
All right. So, the moment of truth. Who are your Super Bowl combatants, and who is your winner? I'll let you go first.
Combatants, once again, very boring. I have Green Bay and New England in the Super Bowl, and unfortunately winning his 6th Super Bowl. For those who don't like to hear it, I have that Tom Brady doing it again. That offense, even though without Edelman, the addition of Philip Dorsett, they got Chris Hogan that's going to be in that rotation. They have a deep rotation at receiver and at running back on that offensive side of the ball. And I think that they're going to go ahead and utilize it to the fullest of their capabilities. And it's going to be one where a lot of defenses are going to have problems trying to keep up. And you have that rotation with that defense getting a little bit better again. Excuse me, as they continue to get older together.
Right.
I don't see nobody, beating this team right now. I really don't.
Well, you got a half right, as far as I'm concerned. I got New England from the AFC. I got Seattle from the NFC. Damn it, what the hell. I've got Seattle getting revenge on New England. I just feel it. Maybe it's gas, but I'm feeling it. I'm feeling something in me that's making me pick Seattle. One last thing. We got 4 minutes left. This is addressing the big, fat-ass pink elephant in the room. We all know what's happened with Kaepernick being blackballed. We got two different reasons why he's being blackballed. But let me just ask the question, because we're both black dudes of HBCUs and whatnot. Are you going to boycott? Are you going to be one of the ones? Are you going to watch the NFL this season? Are you going to be one of the ones who are talking about boycott this, boycott that?
Oh, God, no. Outside of the fact that I cover the NFL and I'm on here with you on a weekly basis, if not talking college football, at least pro football and NBA, whatever, so I have to watch in order to be educated enough to speak with you about that. But even beyond that, yeah, I'm watching. But there's so many other reasons why in which the league could be boycotted outside of just the blackballing of Colin Kaepernick. God, no one likes to talk about how T.O. was blackballed out of the league, and he had almost 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns his last season. But I digress. Right. I understand he didn't protest nothing. He was just jerk T.O., as a lot of people like to accuse him as being, but there's a nice article out there that says that he wasn't as much of a jerk as everyone believed him to be. He just happened to be a big jerk to the media. Right. But as much as I like to say that, you know, Kaepernick wasn't as good of a quarterback as people like to perceive him to be, the league and a lot of these team front offices are not helping themselves by saying a lot of the things that they are against Kaepernick in terms of John Lynch saying that he wants him and Jerry Rice talking about, you know, this is the Niner way, and apparently Kaepernick wasn't doing that. And then you have front offices questioning their fan base and whether or not, they should sign them. Yes. Matter of fact, make it even worse, here comes Ray Lewis talking about Baltimore was going to sign him up until the point his girlfriend sent out that tweet. Really? Really? Is that the reason why you didn't sign him? So that tweet stopped you guys from being competitive. Come on, man. That's insane. But I digress. And then I made a point on social media real quick this week because a friend of mine asked a very interesting question. For those who are watching the NFL, are you going to not watch games on Saturday? Because we all know that the NCAA and college football is just as egregious in terms of treatment, not just to African-American athletes, but to African-American coaches and African-American institutions and their treatment to those institutions. And whether or not, you know, black coaches get blackballed or the APR scores of HBCUs and whether or not these institutions have enough money to help bring in tutors so that these students can go ahead and do better, not just the tutoring, but at least for these students to have enough money so they can go ahead and pay tuition so they can move on. So there's an article that talks about the APR real quick. Written by Vice Sports, that says the APR doesn't care necessarily about your grades. It cares about matriculation and if you can move on. And if you don't have the money to matriculate, it hurts your APR scores. So that's something else that HBCUs tend to fall victim to. So you want to go ahead and protest the NFL, fine and dandy. There's many reasons to do so. I'm not going to tell you not to. But if you want to do that, I want you to go ahead and look at the NCAA and look at their transgressions. And note, I didn't even say anything about players getting paid. That's a whole nother monster. So,
oh God, that's
I need you to go ahead and think through both sides before you just go ahead and look at the league.
Right. Well, that question was posed to me by my wife, my friends here in Cincinnati, and people on social media, my friends on Facebook, social media. When I say social media, I mean Twitter. To be honest with you, I've vacillated because like between the two options. I mean, I'm not as excited. Let's be real with you. I'm not as excited about the season as it's been in the past. Maybe because I'm a I'm a dad of a 7-year-old who's busy, typically busy on weekends anyway, with his soccer and swim lessons and karate. And when I soccer, kick it back up again. We got games both Saturday and Sunday after the afternoon. But I can't quit football, man. Especially the NFL. I can't quit it. I can't quit it. I mean, I just be ruined. I cannot quit the NFL. And again, I'm disappointed with them blackballing Cap. I'm disappointed with double standards and the hypocrisy emanating from fans at the front office. I mean, I could deal with stupid fans, but the front office and the owners playing us to be like chumps, as if we don't really know what's going on. Just come and say it's because it's a protest. Don't say it because he can't play. Don't say it because he breaks locker rooms, none of which are true. And he was named the most – he wore by the 49ers last year for being the most inspirational teammate. How do you give a guy like that that award if he was supposed to have been a cancer? Stop it. Stop it so much.
Yeah.
Just tell me the truth. Tell me the truth. Just say we don't like his protest. We didn't like the way he sat for the flag. We don't really give a damn about police brutality with unarmed black folks and other people of color. We don't care about that. Don't sit for our flag yet. I would respect them a lot more if they came out and said that than playing me another.
But they won't.
And they never will. They never will.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I would respect them more if they came out and said that. But having said all of that, having expressed my disappointment, having expressed my frustration with people who see me do not give a damn about people calling this country, I can't quit the NFL. I just can't. So I'll be watching. I'll be watching my Steelers this year. I keep my eye on Jameis Winston and a bunch of other folks, but it may not be with the same fervor or passion, if you will.
Yeah.
But because of football so much, I can't quit it. I cannot quit it. Now, for those who choose to protest, that's fine. That's all well and good. I'm not gonna debate those folks. That's their opinion. Hell, there are people who are protesting who did not like the fact of players protesting the flag, which is pretty ironic and silly and out of way to look at it. But nevertheless, I'll be watching. I know many folks will be watching. I know many folks who won't be watching. So, So I love this passion discussion because I need to get it off my chest because I've been thinking about it for the past couple of months. And I guess that's my answer. I'll be watching.
I get you. Last two things. One.
Yeah.
I don't mind whatever view you got. Just be educated in your view. That's all I ask.
Right.
Just be educated in your perspective. Don't just come to me with this half, I'm going to say this half-assed perspective that people have come to me with, either in support or in support of either way. Be educated in your view. And to get off the subject real quick, there's something for you to watch out for this weekend in college football. Once again, God, I hate to keep talking about these boys, but the Howard University Bison are on the verge of potentially doing something that no other MEAC team or maybe even FCS team has done, which is beat two FBS schools in the same season. They got Kent State this week. Kent State only won 3 games last year. And last year, one of their losses was to North Carolina A&T State University.
Right.
After getting thrashed this past week, they got Howard at the crib. And we know Howard is already hyped. If Howard can keep up and play the way that they played last week in terms of the play calling and the running ability of both Phil Yaw and Newton, they may end up doing something that no other MEAC team has done ever, which is to beat two FBS schools. I don't know how many FCS schools have ever done it, but I know no MEAC team has done it because we've only had two teams beat FBS schools in the MEAC over the past couple of years. That was Bethune-Cookman over FIU, and then, of course, like I just said, A&T over Kent State.
Right.
How would a team that's only won one game last year maybe the first team to ever beat two in the same season? Watch out.
How about that? How about that? We'll keep an eye on that. And thanks a lot, D. Hope you enjoyed it.
No problem. Thank you, brother.
And good luck to your Washington team. They're going to need it.
Oh, they're going to need it. They're going to need it. And I don't even say good luck to the Steelers because they got the Browns. So
there you go. But you never know. You never know with these damn upsets in the NFL. You never know. But just keep our, both our fingers crossed on that one. Peace out, brother.
Exactly.
That's my guy, Dwayne Ash. Please check him out on .com/HBCU Sports as well as Speakeasy Radio every Tuesday night on Blog Talk Radio. Love this discussion, especially the last part of the last topic. I know a bunch of black folks are thinking about that, but whatever you choose to do, boycott or watch, enjoy yourself this season. Enjoy yourself this fall. Stay safe and all that good stuff. Anyway, thank you all for tuning in. Got this Scott Burks, the Clown Hour, signing off. 06. Good night. Enjoy.